God is not the author of confusion, but of order and structure. Therefore, any sermon which claims to set forth God should be made in his image, that is, with order and structure. Sermon structure and order will also help the preacher to preach and the hearers to hear, as they are both made in the image of God. Just as a tree is made up of roots, a trunk with branches and fruit, so most sermons are made up of an introduction, an exposition, and a conclusion. In this lecture, we will dig into the roots of the sermon and consider its introduction. We will look at the necessity of an introduction, the negatives of an introduction, and the nature of an introduction. Firstly then, the necessity of an introduction. There are two reasons why our sermons should have an introduction. Firstly, ordinary human experience. In our ordinary everyday social contact with other people, we're accustomed to a gradual introduction before the main topic of conversation is introduced. Whether on the phone or in person, we usually spend some time identifying each other and preparing the ground for discussion of the relevant issues. Indeed, we would consider it rude and offensive for someone to abruptly announce the topic of conversation and launch into it. This is simple common sense. Just as music has a prelude and dramas have a prologue, so sermons have an introduction. The second reason why our sermons need an introduction is because of sinful human experience. The preacher has to remember that he's speaking on subjects which the depraved heart of men and women are averse to and opposed to. Even Christians often arrive in church with worldly thoughts and feelings, their souls chilled and deadened by ordinary life in this world. Although the preacher may have mastered his subject and been warmed by it, few of his hearers are like this. Dabney said, "When he is all fire, and they as yet are ice, a sudden contact between his mind and theirs will produce rather a shock and revulsion more than sympathetic harmony." Unquote. It therefore becomes necessary to introduce the subject of our sermon like a gradually rising and warming sun, rather than to blind our hearers with spotlights. We cannot assume that our hearers will be automatically interested in our subject or sympathetic to it, and so we must spend some time in removing indifference, initiating interest, spiritual, practical or intellectual interest, and increasing sympathy. Archibald Alexander warned his students to take great care in preparing their introductions. He warned his students, "It is a great mistake to suppose that the introduction and application of a sermon require little study. Perhaps they require the exercise of invention and ingenuity more than any other part of a sermon." So, the necessity of an introduction should encourage careful preparation. Don't let the ship strike the wall when just getting out of the harbour. We've looked at the necessity of an introduction. Let us now consider the negatives of an introduction. In this section, we shall consider some things to avoid in introducing a sermon. Firstly, don't be too long. Overlengthy introductions imbalance the sermon, waste time, and weary the congregation. An introduction should contain only one leading thought. Dabney remarked, "There is no need of a porch to enter a porch. We desire to step at once from the porch into the house." Unquote. Secondly, don't be too showy. Some preachers think that they will get their hearers' attention by displaying their historical, cultural, or literary learning in their introduction. shun the sensational and anything that smacks of display. Thirdly, don't be too ambitious. Trying to link a distant event or saying with the subject of the sermon by a long series of elaborate logical leaps will not be persuasive. The introduction must be clearly relevant to the body of the sermon. Fourthly, don't be too personal. To start with a personal story now and again may be acceptable, but not as a general rule. Fifthly, don't be too loud. The introduction is meant to be a gradual awakening, not a bugle in the ear which exhausts the preacher for the main body of the sermon. Save your steam for the hot parts. Sixthly, don't be too predictable. One writer has argued that a good introduction to a sermon would only be good for that sermon and for no other. If it is adaptable to other sermons, then it probably is too general and vague. Try to avoid stereotypical and predictable introductions. Sometimes it may be useful to give a brief introduction before reading the text. Simply, don't steal the sermon's thunder. The introduction should pave the way for the sermon, not repeat it. If you introduce later material from the main body of the sermon in the introduction, you end up repeating the introduction. Dabney condemned this practice thus. He said, "A stone which is absolutely necessary to close his arch has been already laid in the threshold." Eighthly, don't be apologetic. Preachers must not introduce their sermons with an apology for themselves or their sermons. This will not excite sympathy in the hearers, but contempt. Preachers are authorized and authoritative ambassadors of Christ, and must convey that. Ninthly, don't flatter. Preachers who begin by flattering their audiences will be regarded as insincere sycophants. Tenthly, don't be offensive. Great care must be taken not to offend taste, especially at the beginning, when first impressions are so important. Have a regard to the age and sensitivities of your congregation. We have looked at the necessity of the introduction and the negatives of an introduction. Let us now consider the nature of an introduction by examining the various types of sermon introduction. First of all, there is the pay attention introduction. Sometimes the preacher might begin with a solemn call for attention to an important subject. This was done in Scripture by Moses, Deuteronomy 4:1, Stephen, Acts 7:2, and the Lord, Matthew 15:10. But such a request, if often repeated, will lose its force, and it's usually best to say something that will at once interest the hearer's mind. "What is the best way," asked a young preacher of an older one, "to get the attention of the congregation?" "Give him something to attend to," was the gruff reply. Secondly, the contextual introduction. This is one of the more common types of introduction, where the preacher will explain the connections and relations between the text and the surrounding material. This has the benefit of keeping the text central in the sermon, and so in the minds of the hearers. Thirdly, there is the background introduction. Here the preacher will explain the history or geography or culture of the people and places relevant to the text or the context. Fourthly, the principal introduction. In this case, the preacher will begin with a principle which is familiar to the hearers and proceed to show how in the sermon this particular example proves the principle. Any statement of principle should be positive, brief, bold, and exact. Fifthly, the example introduction. This is really a reversal of the principal introduction. Here, the preacher begins with a real-life example which illustrates a principle he is about to preach on. The example must have gravity and dignity so as not to jar with the sacred material to follow in the sermon. Dabney recounts how a New Year's sermon on the text, "This year thou shalt die," was introduced by the statement that both Jonathan Edwards and Samuel Davies preached from this passage at the beginning of the years in which they were unexpectedly cut off by death. A made-up example may also be used now and again, as long as its fictional character is noted. Sixthly, a contrast introduction. This is again related to the previous two types of introduction, except in this case, a commonly held worldly principle or well-known example of worldly conduct is contrasted with scriptural principles or examples which are then preached upon. Seventhly, a topical introduction. The preacher can often gain attention and arouse interest by preaching on a subject of current national or ecclesiastical interest. Eighthly, an advantageous introduction. A sermon may be introduced by the highlighting of the advantages, intellectual, emotional, spiritual or practical, which attend upon the study of a particular subject. This is especially useful when the subject may be especially sensitive or offensive to the natural heart of men and women. Ninthly, a seasonal introduction. Reference to a particular time of year in the national, local or ecclesiastical calendar may profitably form material for sermon introductions. 10. An apologetic introduction. This is not a contradiction of the earlier negative, don't be apologetic. This is a reference to the need for the preacher to confront error and heresy in the church and outside of it. He may begin with a reference to a person, a cult or an organisation which holds a particular view, and then go on to prove its falsehood and assert the biblical truth. In this lecture, we have briefly considered the sermon's roots, its introduction. In our next lecture, we will progress to consider the sermon's trunk and branches, its organisation.